John Fain.
On radio, online and on digital.
The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne.
And on ABC Victoria.
Got a fabulous lineup with live performances from Colin Hay, Michael Lunig performing live with musicians. He's preparing for a concert. My co-host for the Conversation Hour today is Father Bob Maguire, the Australian Catholic priest formerly of South Melbourne Parish, but now working from the front seat of his car. Father Bob, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, John. Yeah, and the boot.
The boot as well.
The boot's got the robes in it to use for weddings and funerals.
They gave you the boot.
Give me the boot, the dust boot. Yeah. No, but I mean, otherwise, I mean, I've just been down there this very morning where the Minister for Housing has opened 42 units of community housing, which we had installed over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was. You see, they've given me room number 8.
What, named it after you?
No, let me live in it.
Are you allowed to live there?
So I moved. I'm going to live there. And the only problem was when the camera followed us into number 8,
mm-hmm.
there's a double bed.
You're allowed to have a double bed, aren't you?
Well, I told Grace previously, for God's sake, get out of the unit before the camera comes. They said, Grace who? I said, Amazing Grace.
A priest's allowed to have double beds even if they're, of course, supposed to be the only occupant.
I don't know. Well, that's just sleeping with Jesus.
No, you can toss and turn
something
a bit,
like
you
that.
See?
No tossing and turning either. I think it's forbidden.
Cuddle up to a pillow?
Yeah, can't do any of that, comrade.
No?
No. See?
Not even, those are impure thoughts even, are
that's
they?
Weird, impure, yes, and also impossible because you're 78.
Mm-hmm.
You can't toss and turn anyway.
Yes, you can.
Can you?
Yeah.
Well,
I've
got to the stage where I can neither toss nor turn.
In fact, older people tend to toss
do
and turn
it,
even
do
more,
they?
Don't they? Yeah. I mean, I mean really toss and turn, not kind of, you know.
Yeah. I don't put that into my head because I'll talk myself into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also meant for the dog too, my standard poodle, you see. I mean, I don't know how he's going to take to yet another change.
Do you snort?
How the hell would I know?
Well, you could run a recording or people could say we hear you through
the
wall.
Darling, you're snoring.
No,
shut up.
Hear you through the wall.
Well, I've never been any place where there was anybody else anywhere near you for 38 years. I lived in a big house that was double storied, but in fact, you were a monk. Before they installed the monks, I was a de facto monk. But anyway, I mean, it's
some
it's,
people wake themselves up snoring.
Oh no, I haven't done that. I haven't done that. I only need about 5-6 hours, you know.
Sleep.
Yeah, that's about all I'm getting just now because I'm living in a place. Thank you to the Electrical Trades Union for paying the rent on my Victoria Avenue shop front.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that. It's a little room down the back. That's before I move into this new place. It's like living on the job. So you go to bed at night just having finished work and you fall out of the bed at 6 o'clock in the morning and lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, you're back at work within an hour and a half. Now, I reckon that doesn't do me any harm because at least I know I'm not dead. You know what I mean?
There'd be a few ways of finding out whether you're dead or not, wouldn't
there?
That's only one of them.
But when you see, I think that, yeah, I agree because a lot of people say, look, you've got to learn to enjoy yourself now that you've got old. And I'm saying, I had to Google it.
Getting old?
No, enjoy.
Hey, it was a big blow and you fought tooth and nail over losing your parish.
Yeah.
Have you adjusted?
No.
Still hurts?
Yeah.
Fair enough too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm using the word now. I shouldn't bang on about this kind of thing because people have been through far greater hell than I have. But extradition, that's stuck in my head, you see. Instead of saying, you know, that you've been, whatever the word would be, retired,
mm-hmm.
I feel as though I've been extradited because there was so much yet to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that place to turn into a precinct where every little piece of church property and estate fitted together to be at the service of the neighbourhood. You know what I mean? Even the bloody garden, we were going to turn it into a sensory therapeutic garden.
Oh, a sensory therapeutic garden.
Yes.
Not just a garden.
Not just a garden.
No, anyone could have a garden.
You see what I mean?
This is sensory and therapeutic.
For the neighbourhood.
Are they making a documentary about you?
They are. Ghost ghost pictures, is it, or films? Richard Lowenstein and Anne-Marie. Yeah, they came up to me about 4 or 5 years ago when they heard the news that I was going to be extradited. And they said, we'd like to do a... And I said, darling, there's no movie in this story. I'm telling you now. You know, because I couldn't see any... I mean, I just saw a succession of things happening and not terribly dramatically. And because it was Roman Catholicism, it was pretty covert. Nobody would know what was going on. I knew what was going on. It was a change of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Vatican II cafeteria Catholicism being outed by the authentic George Pell Catholicism.
Yeah.
And that's fair. If that's a cultural change, it's a cultural change.
Yeah, pendulums swing.
Well, unfortunately, it swung in my favour in the 60s because I'd been to the top of the mountain and seen the promised land. I saw a Catholicism that could actually put itself at the service of a neighbourhood.
I suppose it's not so much the pendulum as what's that thing you walk with the incense down the...
Oh, the thurible.
The thurible.
The thurible. Yeah. Isn't that nice?
But you see, you could do what that priest, what's his name, Kennedy, in Brisbane.
Yeah, but he shot through.
What's his name?
Peter Kennedy.
Peter Kennedy. You could do what he did.
No, I can't because I'm a company man.
Well, he was for a while too, and then he decided that the company...
Yeah, but once
would,
a company man,
part company
always
with
a company,
the company
man. You can't. I'm not going to set up a sect or a cult.
No.
Well, that's why that's
some
why
of us think that all religions are a little different.
Well,
some are just more recently invented than others.
Yes, truly. What, the master and all that.
Yeah.
But poor old Catholicism, I've got... Look, she's me mother.
Yeah.
She's me mother, spiritual mother.
Not your mistress.
Not me mistress, but she can be a bit of a tart, me mother.
But you're stuck with it.
I love
so
me
So unlike
mother.
Peter Kennedy, who thinks he can just
yes,
sort of...
he started off... and also divisive. I don't want to be divisive. I can be a pain
Sorry?
In the ass. No, divisive, I think, John, you know better than I do. There's a difference between disrespectful and irreverent.
Some would say I don't know the difference.
But of course you do.
Going back to the documentary,
yes.
Which is in typical fashion you've managed to hijack us.
Sorry.
The people making the documentary
yes.
are doing this most trendy of things. They're crowdsourcing the documentary.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is let people know that if they're interested,
yes.
they can make a contribution, anything from $1
upwards. Apparently. Can I just read this sentence?
Have you got a bit about it, have you?
Crowdfunding is a vertically integrated financing structure at its most basic. It's about the audience paying for the DVD or merchandise during the film's production rather than once the film is made and distributed. So all the funds go directly into making the film. We have to raise $30,000 by the 2nd of December. Otherwise, none of the pledges made to date will be processed.
Yep.
Today's status, we have raised $18,727. So we only have to raise only 11,525 days.
But dollars. But the idea.
What did I say? Pounds.
Days. You said not dollars. But the idea here is that individuals can make contributions, and you can have thousands of people putting in $10 each.
Oh yeah, and then
rather than one or two rich people putting in tens of thousands of dollars.
And then you can go looking for the gap funding.
Yeah.
See what I mean? But you've got to show that you've got your own little nest egg.
It's terribly fashionable, this crowdsourcing.
Yeah, I didn't realise that.
People like to be saying, oh, look, I put $10 into this and therefore I own a little stake in it.
Yeah. And the reason why, because I'm embarrassed, because the thing that they've called the thing In Bob We Trust. Now, to me...
Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh, it's hubris. To me, it's embarrassing. But that's what they've called the thing.
Well,
and
if you called it that, that'd be hubris. But if they've called it that, it's...
Well, I've got to talk about it, see, because
it's
says...
It's a tribute.
Well, it says here about possible is the thing, isn't
this
it?
This is how you make your... If you want to make a contribution to crowdsourcing, you go to this website, Pozible, P-O-Z-I-B-L-E, not possible with an S, but Z. P-O-Z-I-B-L-E, possible.com, and then you put in...
Slash?
In Bob We Trust.
In Bob We Trust.
Just like that.
Yeah. Now, the story I think needs to be told, if... And the Aussies like local rather than global.
Yep.
And this is, in fact, a local story of an old parish, 150 years old since Eureka, actually getting to the stage where it became the heart of the neighbourhood.
And that's the story.
That's the story.
So they're making a doco for television or for the big screen, do you
know?
The
big screen, I
believe. For the big screen. Yeah, like film festival type doco.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, film festival type.
Richard Lowenstein, I mean, he's got an enormous, significant track record.
Yeah. Reservoir Dogs is a Reservoir Dogs.
And I mean, all
the latest.
All sorts of successes.
All kinds of things.
Yeah.
Well, they can Google Ghost.
So proper filmmaker.
Yeah.
So they're trying to raise $30,000 and they're nearly up to 20.
Nearly up to it.
Nearly up to 20, but they're looking for more contributions through crowdsourcing. And you go to Pozible, P-O-Z-I-B-L-E, pozible.com/InBobWeTrust. Or you can just search for In Bob We Trust, which is the name of the documentary
that
Lowenstein is
and
making about Father Bob
McGuire. And I think
you
get a teaser that I knew in the old days as a trailer.
A sample, a free sample.
Free sample.
And then you can own a little part of the documentary. You probably, well, depending on how much you contribute, you can get DVD copies, get invited to special events, all of those sorts of things.
You get T-shirts and things,
T-shirts?
Yeah, I think so.
What, with you on it?
Well, I think me mug's on it.
Oh, no.
Viva la Bob. I don't know what she's got on it this time, but there was a T-shirt wandering around with Viva la Bob.
So that would be, what, special collector's edition, limited edition?
Oh, might, yeah.
Individually autographed and numbered. Once only opportunity. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
All that kind of thing.
Father Bob McGuire.
But thanks for having us on, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to meet such identities as
Colin Hay,
and Michael.
Colin Hay, who'll sing a song for us, and Michael Lunig,
yep.
who is putting on a performance at the Recital Centre where he collaborates with musicians to put some of his work to music and then in front of a live audience. And they're going to show us what it's about with live performance here in the studio with Michael Lunig, philosopher, muse, artist, cartoonist, all sorts of things. Michael Lunig, our first guest, joining us in just a moment.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Our first guest is the artist, poet, philosopher and muse, Michael Lunig, who's come in with musicians for reasons that I don't yet understand but I think are about to be explained to us for the conversation now today. Morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, John.
You're hunting in a pack now.
No. No, I'm being swept along with these musicians who are all lovely people. I have great respect for the musicians and envy too. A sort of, I wish I had done that in my life. What happened, John? It's about this. We're doing a show at the Melbourne Recital Centre on the weekend, and it came about about 8 years ago. I received in the mail a little CD that somebody had sent me, and it was from Gian, who was sitting beside me.
Hello, Gian.
And Gian is a beautiful singer and composer.
Yeah.
And she had taken quite a number of my little verses that I've had published in the newspaper, you know, accompanying cartoons, and she had set them to music, simple as that. And they were just beautiful, delightful things, I thought. And over the years, she's done more and more of such things. And so on the weekend, she'll perform them with a group of musicians. And
so when you
asked me,
why do they need you?
Well, I don't know. They sort of insisted, and so I get dragged onto the stage, and it's a great privilege. But
you don't just stand there.
I don't. I sort of skulk onto the stage, you know, cringe in the darkness somewhat. But I draw. I draw. That's what I do, and I draw with a pen. And up it comes on a big screen, and I draw while Gian is singing, or between the songs, etc., and make it up as I go along, as I do when I'm working for the newspaper.
So you're not drawing something that you've already had published? It's something new?
Oh, there's sort of, I might have a starting point, you know, a fellow with a big nose standing on a hill and his trousers falling down or something. I don't know. And then I'll improvise very much. It's very improvisational and responding to the night and the people and what Gian is doing, etc.
Okay, and we don't know what Gian does, but we're about to find out because Gian is here with Simon and they're performing with Michael Lunig, Billy the Rabbit. So now, Gian, thank you for coming in. Simon, good morning to you. Now, what have you got for us? What are we going to hear?
Well, this is a very new song that came via the Sydney Morning Herald, just a cartoon that Michael had placed in there that inspired me. And it's sort of, Michael's such a melodic writer that you just have to put your ear up and it's actually got chords attached. So this is a spring love song.
He was a light in his own darkness. She was a joy in her own sadness. They were two little birds in a big wild storm. Two little birds with nothing to hold on to. She was a song that he heard all night long. He was the soil in her garden. They were the line where the sky meets the mountain. Two little birds in a big wild storm.
And so many questions arising on how on earth you choose from the vast body of Lunig work, which songs you then give the musical treatment to, which poems you give the musical treatment to, Guillaume.
Yeah, just personal favourites, really. It's that simple, I think. I mean, a lot of them are a little bit lean that way in a metre, you know, that the rhyming metre is obvious, but probably the one of the wildest ones, the new ones we do on the weekend called Murray Darling, that was probably the hardest one to interpret into a song, where it's sort of a love letter to the Murray Darling, which wasn't necessarily such a rhyming thing, but turned out okay.
And Michael, the collaboration from your point of view, how does it work? What do you do?
Well, it's lovely, first of all, to see your work, which is written to a newspaper deadline. You think, what's this got to do with life? And I just do these things under pressure, but they come out as they do. And then this other person picks them up, the other artist, you know, takes them, and a musician. And this is the greatest kind of response you could possibly have. If someone else picks up and makes it into something beyond you, and then you hear your work back to yourself, you hear your voice or your thoughts, and you see it afresh and anew, and that's quite a blessing. I don't know whether you've had that experience, John, of having your words picked up and...
Usually in an uncomplimentary
I think you get it a lot, don't you? But no, it's a lovely thing. And so I'm just there drawing and reflecting as it goes. And it's an unusual kind of a show. It wanders all over the place. Just a funny mix of...
Do you talk as well?
I do little sort of dissertations.
Can't shut him up, really.
I do little sermons or something like this. Not tell a little lie and a story.
That's
in the background
Father Bob's
of something.
You call it a sermon.
Yeah. No, and
well, we're in the same business. Trying to make the unbelievable believable.
Tangible, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I talk a little.
And why wouldn't you? Hey, I don't know if you could put today's cartoon to music. I don't know if you've seen today's Age newspaper, have you, Gian? Michael, you could give us a rendition of what's in the paper today, because I laughed out loud when I saw
it. It's simply, what is it? It's a souvenir of the Melbourne Cup and all those lovely people who were rolling around in the dirt.
I saw them when I came in yesterday morning.
No, it's just it's Ms. Melissa Codsdale Bumley being partnered by Randy Toolhouse of Docklands. No, it doesn't translate, John. You can't set this one to music.
Doesn't immediately leap to mind.
Well, no. It's that awful thing that happens.
Ms. Melissa Codsdale Bumley of Brighton was partnered by Aussie Wild Bull Chemical CEO Randy Toolhouse of Docklands. And what you've got is a woman who is a kind of Lunig incarnation of Bryn Edelston, if I can put it that way.
There's a little influence. Yeah, you put it that way. Yeah, but yeah, this influence has come upon me, yeah.
And he looks like a character out of sort of Underbelly meets corporate Melbourne.
But not an unusual looking man, really. There were lots of them at the Cup yesterday, and there were a lot of Bryn Edelstons as far as I could work out.
There was Prince Charles, and there was Princess Camilla.
Yes. No, it's something I can't relate to anymore, John. It's all over for me. I did with the Melbourne Cup but a long time ago. It's just an extraordinary thing.
Was it always thus? Was it ever thus?
No, I was never there, really, no.
No. Just
waiting for the rank outsider to come from the back of the pack.
No, I can't relate to it. I can't relate to the footy. I can't relate to none of it, John.
The footy?
I'm about to be deported, I think.
No, I'm coming with you.
No, it's all right if people want to do that. I'm not against it, but I'm just not a good Australian, I'm afraid.
Do you have a flutter on Cup Day?
No.
No.
Do you go on a sweep?
No.
Do you have a barbecue?
No.
What do you do?
I worked yesterday.
He sees things.
Yeah, I just get up in the morning. Isn't it? I don't do many of these things. No. Christmas Day.
Did you?
Anything.
Went to the TAB.
Queued
up, made a fool of myself, put on the mystery bet. Wasted some money on choosing something as if I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. You got to have the air of knowing something.
Spoke authoritatively with other people who didn't know what they were talking about either. Avoided getting a parking ticket. Went and liberally distributed my advice to all the other people who didn't know what they were doing either.
Yeah.
All the things that you do.
Yes.
Well, you're well catered for, John. There's a lot of...
many ways for a fool to be separated from his money.
The previous two cups, I'd actually been asked to go and throw holy water over the stables of Dick Williams.
Now you're talking...
Now, I did throw it last year, I think, and the horse actually fell over at the, what do you call it?
Barrier? The deadline.
They're off! Oh. Bang! Fell over. Now, I was wondering why they didn't ask me this time.
I wonder.
And lo and behold, the goddamn horse wins.
Oh.
And the jockey makes the sign.
He did.
He did too.
Look at this.
That'd be a first, wouldn't it?
I'd like to thank God for winning the cup. Now, come on, you could make a cartoon out of that.
I probably couldn't, Bob, no. There's a lot of things. There's less and less things I can make cartoons out of.
Well, they're already
days.
Cartoons
it is
in their
cartoon.
Own right.
Exactly that,
a three-dimensional
Bob.
Cartoon.
You said it, and after a while, you think, what can I say?
What can I add to it?
Oh, yeah.
Beyond parody.
The problem is, John, you remind me that there are those who are well catered for. If you love the footy, there's footy all over the newspaper. Yeah. It used to be on the back page when I was a boy. Now it's on the front page, which I think is a bit lamentable. But and then there's races and there's sport and there's all that stuff. Now, that's fine if you like that. But what happens if you don't belong in that? You have to go your way. And that's good too.
But so many of the news businesses that are businesses, as opposed to, for instance, the ABC, because we're holier than thou and we're superior and we're sitting on a pedestal looking down at them all because we have government funding. Mm. But the businesses that are businesses in the news are looking for ways of making money all the time because they're struggling. So they're looking for tie-ins with football, with racing, with anything that pays a buck. Yeah. And that's inevitable, and they're the people who've given you your livelihood.
Produces a great conformity. No, I don't think so. I've given myself my livelihood too. In a way, I have a part in that, and I'm giving them their livelihood as well, you see. You've got every person who works in the media must remember that. And I say, I just, if you are a bit of an outsider, which a cartoonist is kind of is inclined to be by nature, not a bitter outsider, they're happy to wander on the field and pick the daisies, but but they see it differently. They look at this mass conformity, the mass-mindedness of the footy world, the mass-mindedness of the racing world, and all these kind of things we have to plug into and we automatically assume we're interested in and significant. I beg to differ. I just say, no, I think it's boring. There's a bigger world beyond that. It's, you know, there's otherworldliness as well, which is beautiful.
Contrariness is not as valued as it once was or perhaps should still be.
Well, contrariness is a bit obstreperous, isn't it? But, I mean, to just think differently or to be yourself and uniquely so and value the uniqueness of the fellow sitting next to you.
Saying no to the mob.
What?
Saying no to the mob.
Absolutely. As Goethe said, join the smallest crowd.
Yeah, yep. Gian, thank you for that sampler of your work. It was beautiful, and lots of people saying how much they enjoyed it. But there is a CD.
There is.
Which comes out not just with the music, but with a beautiful
pink-lined book.
A collection of the words and drawings that have inspired the songs. It's beautifully done. So congratulations on that. That's Gian and Lunig, Billy the Rabbit. Is the title.
Dead.
Billy was my daughter's rabbit, and I wrote a little poem about the death of the rabbit. Oh, sentimental verse.
What happened to the rabbit?
He died on a very bleak day up in the country where we lived, up on the farm. She came home from school and discovered him lying there.
Natural causes?
Probably, yeah.
Something to do with the guinea pig.
So it was a great lament, you know.
Yeah, it's very sad when rabbits die.
We all know.
Father Bob McGrath, my co-host Michael Lunig with Billy the Rabbit, being performed, Simon and Gian performing for us live here in the studio. And the CD, beautifully produced, Gian and Lunig, Billy the Rabbit. The CD is out now. Hey, Mr. Lunig, aren't you working on a collected Lunig kind of...
I've done
monstrous
that.
Work.
It is finished, John.
It's finished?
Yeah.
Is it out?
It's sitting there on my desk, but it'll be out very soon, at the end of the month, I think, yeah.
In time for Christmas?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, sorry, in time for New Year's.
Yeah, something. Yeah. No, it's there, and it's all ready to go. And it's
kind of,
yeah, it looks back on. It's 400 images, 400 pages, and it's been a bit confronting to look back.
So it must be about the size of a phone book.
Yeah. It's large, and it's a hardback. I've never done that before.
A hardback, limited edition, individually numbered and signed.
There is a little aspect of it has been done in that way, but no, mostly it's just, you know, a regular old book on a shelf.
Congratulations. Father Bob, Michael Lunig, Gian and Simon, thank you very much for joining us. But in a moment, Colin Hay, and he'll be performing live here on The Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
I'm John Fain, Father Bob McGuire. I nearly committed a terrible error then.
Why?
I nearly said defrocked, but you're not defrocked. You've just been just demoted.
Demythologised.
Yeah. Father Bob McGuire.
And a Glaswegian, like Colin.
Co-host. Michael.
No, not quite a Glaswegian.
We were Glaswegian. Were you not Glaswegian?
No, I was not. Sorry.
No. No, keep going.
I come from Ayrshire, which is 30 miles from Glasgow. That's more hills and dales.
Yes.
But my mother and father are from Glasgow.
Yes. Yeah, we were just Broomhill Road, Springburn, in Glasgow, where they left in 1920.
It's a great city.
Great city. Mm. Yeah.
Colin Hay joins us with Michael Lunig and Father Bob McGuire, and they've already taken off and they're up and running, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Out of the gate before the start is even.
Taken off.
Hey, good to see you.
You too.
And last time we spoke were very sad circumstances.
Yeah, very sad. It's still sad.
It's still very sad. Your mate had very suddenly died on us.
Mm. Yeah, and I spoke to you, and I was unprepared for the level of uncontrollable emotion that I felt at the time.
Colin.
But it doesn't matter.
Gregor died suddenly. You were about to go on stage in Chicago,
Baltimore.
In Baltimore. And we got you backstage just as you were about to go out. And you ended up in tears in the interview talking to us about the death of your great Men at Work collaborator and songwriter.
Mm.
So is this your first time back in Melbourne since?
I'm not sure.
Was it hard to come back to Melbourne?
It's difficult, yeah. It's very odd coming here and he's not around. I mean, in some ways, I mean, he's very alive to me still. Like, you know, Michael and I were talking about this before, about our fathers and how since they've died, they seem to be almost more present. Or maybe perhaps not, but there's another something else involved there. But Greg is definitely, you know, I think about him so much, and he was a really fabulous person.
And a much troubled individual, though, as we most of us only learned after he was dead.
I don't know whether he was any more troubled than anyone else. It's just that, you know, it affects people in different ways. You know, he was, you know, and it's a difficult thing to talk about because I don't like to talk about what was going on with him. He wasn't very happy towards the end of his life. But whenever I saw him, he was the same as I'd always known him, which was.
And that's the multifaceted alarm bell.
And
it's the alarm bell moment for so many of us because we operate at a social level. We put on a brave face for the world, no matter what demons there might be or whatever's going on behind the scenes. We kind of quarantine it from the rest of the world, don't we?
Well, you know, I knew him very well, and I knew what was going on with him. And I, we were very old friends, and that's part of the frustration is feeling some sense of impotence about being able to. Be you know, you feel you want to have more influence in someone's life because you want them to obviously to keep on living, you know. But and ultimately we all make our own choices about what we do on a daily basis, you know.
Michael, you got a mention there from Colin about the relationship with your father.
Oh, that's an observation. We are just chatting to Colin. Colin knew my father, and there's a very funny story involving Colin and my father. It's just so, brings my father back to me. In fact, I was hearing Colin tune his guitar outside, and he was sitting there playing a few chords, and it was really quite an emotional moment for me because I always remember Colin sitting in my home in Dalesford, my parents' home in Dalesford, and Colin would often come by when he played Dalesford back in the early days of Men at Work, and Colin was very generous with his guitar and his music and his singing, and he got to know my father pretty well.
They were beautiful days. They were really.
So how did you first meet?
Well, through that, actually. We used to play at the Royal Hotel in Dalesford, and what often used to happen, well, I say often, it probably happened a few times, was that after we would finish playing, we would often go back to Bernie and Jean's house, which was the house in Dalesford, and there was always it was a party. And, you know, it was, and they were fabulous, you know, people from all, you know, walks of life wandering around, and they were just great affairs, and often I would find myself sitting in the kitchen playing some tunes. And so I got to know his mum and dad a bit, and I remember telling Bernie one day, I was in southern New South Wales, and because I can't see out of my right eye, I was walking along, and I just saw this movement, and I looked, and I saw this black snake, and it was just up, and it was just staring right at me, you know. And I was telling Bernie Lunig and his mum Jean about this thing, and Bernie listened to me, and then he said, "Oh, you never want to worry if a snake's staring at you, Cole. Because you only want to worry if a snake frowns at you."
Oh, dear.
My father had a lot of those funny old stories that came. They're probably very Australian, I guess. And
the timing
also.
The timing also where he would wait. Yeah. You know, there was a moment where he would, you know, and it was usually the last, you know, he would.
Exactly that.
Right,
Colin, yes,
exactly. You know, he would be on the fringe too. He would always be on the fringe, kind of on the fringe of the circle, but then it would be the last, you know, the last thing said, which was.
So it's genetic, being the observer clown.
It's only dawned on me that my father was a lovely storyteller, but he wouldn't have regarded himself as such. It was just what he did. After all, us kids had stopped talking and arguing about this, and he would be listening, and he'd suddenly drop in a little tale about what happened that day in the meatworks, and it was so beautifully timed. I didn't appreciate it at the time, and I think... Mm. Oh, I think I must have got something of this from my dad, this enjoyment of stories, telling stories, listening to other people's stories. Beautiful, yeah. And, of course, Colin does exactly the same thing.
Well, storytelling, which is, Father Bob, kind of the role of the priest often, too.
These gentlemen can tell stories and they can also make music, either in cartoons or in with Colin with his beautiful guitar.
It's funny what you were saying. I was listening out there, what Michael was saying, too, about the football and all that. If you're not into that, you know, the mass event, or you feel like you're always a little bit like not, you know, you're fringe dwelling to a degree, you know, and it happened to me sometimes where, you know, I'd be standing in a hotel and a man, a very kind of, you know, like a corporate gentleman would come up to me and say to me, like, great, mate, you know, that song you wrote for the America's Cup, brilliant, you know, like, that's really good, great idea, mate, you know, how you marketed that, that's brilliant, putting that song to the cup. And I just thought to myself, you know, nothing could be further from the truth, you know, you're just kind of writing these wee songs trying to just get some kind of expression out, you know, and years later, you know, someone picks it up, you know, to be the theme for a yacht race, which is completely out of your hands. And it's a different way of, you know, he's talking about Jan taking Michael's thing and running with it, you know, but this is something else that's completely out of your hands, which was never, you know, really the intention. It was really just, you know, this attempt to kind of, you know, talk about this land that we live in and how complex it is, you know, but people always want to kind of make it something which is just, let's contain it and let's keep it, you know, let's keep it simple and keep it something. Even the song that the big song that I had, and people go, "Oh, mate, you know, it's been like an official anthem." You know, and I'm thinking to myself, "Well, actually, if you listen to it, it's quite dark." You know, in essence, you know, it's not really that simple.
Yes,
I was thinking of that song this morning, Colin, when I was reading about what was happening at the Cup amongst all the drunken people who were reveling, and I was thinking of that. A lot of those words, and I thought, I can see the darkness in that song, because there comes a point when all that revelry becomes kind of appalling and frightening somewhere. And so there was that in your song, but not intended. And when you when you recount this moment, this vulnerable moment when you're writing, you're sitting there late at night, and it's a very beautiful moment, actually, but it's, you're so alone, and it's a fragile, stumbling thing to find it. Right. It's a glorious thing, and then it becomes your huge song, and it's the disparity between the great hit and that moment of creation is beautiful.
And it's also, and I was thinking also, you know, just the cartoon-like quality of that massiveness, you know, even the last, you know, the Olympic thing, which was the commercial for it and so forth, you know, but at the bottom of that, you know, you have this person kind of sitting there just kind of like, you know, writing this story.
Can I scratch out a song? And you've got the guitar and you've got a song for us for today, and you've popped up in all sorts of other things, including some television lately in Jack Irish, and I want to ask about that after we hear the song, though. So what are you going to sing for us
today? I don't know, really. I mean, I could play, seeing as how, I mean, I've played the song before here, because you liked the song, and then we were talking about our fathers and stuff.
Tribute to your father.
So I could do that song if you would like that song.
Well, anything from Topanga will do me. I love the song about your dog, Boy, but you sang that one about 5 years ago when you were here, so I feel greedy asking for it again. But there's a new CD which I haven't heard, Gathering Mercury.
Yeah, I'll do this one. This is the father song's on that one, even although I've played that one before, because Bob here mentioned it.
Yeah, the father. 3 years ago. Was Colin's father's departure, and I love the words because it reminds me of my father, poor Jim, merchant sailor.
Was Jim too.
Yeah, so. Maribyrnong River last night, where poor old Jim parked his last ship in the 40s. So when I read these words, they touched me.
The Maribyrnong River was the river of my childhood.
Look at this. What's going on here? An epiphany, for God's sake.
I think it's
and
a
none
song.
Of us are religious.
Dear Father, I've got your photographs. Thank God for photographs. Hip hip, hooray. Dear Father, I know you love to laugh, though. Most of your photographs didn't seem that way. Dear Father, can't let you go just yet. And I still can't forget you walking around. Dear Father, you're starring in my dreams. You're stealing all the scenes. Where did you go? In my wandering mind,
I stumble through time. I sing through the air. I look for you there. Dear Father, I didn't get to say goodbye. I was singing on the River Clyde. I didn't know. Dear Father, I see you dancing still. I think I always will, till the day I die. Dear Father, I feel your healing hands as I fall asleep I can, plain as the day. Dear Father, you're in my reflection. I reach out and touch you now. Where did you go? Dear Father, I am still curious why you still make me furious. It was so long ago. Dear Father, I've got your photographs. Thank God for photographs. Hip hip. Hooray. Yippee-i-yay, yippee-i-yo.
That's beautiful, Colin.
Thank you so much.
And I've got fan mail coming in, people saying I've had to pull over in the car and yes. weeping, and it's so beautiful.
Yes. Glad they pulled over, because it's good to pull over before you weep.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yes. Weeping and driving.
Yes,
yeah.
No good.
You'd be a bloody idiot, that's true. Hey, television.
Yes.
How did you get into that?
Oh, just they asked me. I mean, I like it. It's good fun doing that, you know. A friend of mine who wrote, Andrew Knight, wrote the... this piece, Jack Irish, and he
based
said,
on the Peter Temple books and yes. adapted by Andrew Knight. Yep,
and that's right, yeah, and exactly right. And he thought there might be a part in it, so he mentioned it to the director, and they had me come in, and I did this. What was it? Nasty Policeman.
Yeah,
so, it was good. I liked it. I mean, I like it.
You're a casting director's dream, really, aren't you? You've got such a distinctive-looking face, and with the different eye lines, of course, it suits.
With different eye lines, indeed, yes. I can look at two cameras at once. But it's, you know, I mean, I'd like to do more. I actually thought that I would have done a lot more by now, but
There you were in House, doing the wandering around with a guitar in the middle of the hospital.
Scrubs,
sorry. Yes. House, that's his other one.
Yes. Yeah. I thought I would have done more, but I've been touring for a lot, you know, I've been... you know, playing the solo shows now for a long, long time, which I started off doing. I thought it would be a temporary thing, you know, doing the solo tours while I plotted and schemed and figured out how to get back to the, you know, the lofty peaks of superstardom, you know, where I'd been.
Although you told us last time you didn't really want to go back there. You were doing the solo tour, and are you looking at me?
Yeah, but I think that at the time, that's what, you know, like 20, 25 years ago, I thought, oh, you know, these, you know, I want those moments again. And then you kind of, the universe is this kind of odd way of putting you on this path, which is really probably the path that I'm supposed to be on. Because I travel around and I perform all the time, mm-hmm. as you know, yeah. And it's working, it's very fulfilling and quite nourishing, you know.
You're speaking as if there's destiny, the path I'm supposed to be on, which is a bit Michael Lunig-esque.
Well...
Do you believe in destiny?
I'm not sure. I believe in... you know, DNA, like my father was in the same business as I was. And I feel like I'm carrying on his work, even although he stopped at a very early age. I always felt like there was a path. I never thought, oh, I'm going to be a musician. I was just like, this is clearly what I want to do, and so in a sense, maybe that is destiny. I'm not sure, but I worked very hard on it, and then luck plays a plays a role.
Each of you have forged your very own path. I mean, Father Bob, you're as unconventional as a priest can be. Michael, you're as unconventional as a wandering minstrel muse type person can be, which is what Colin's ended up doing too.
Yeah. Well, I like that, what Colin's saying about the DNA and all that kind of thing, but also what you were saying about the universe. Now, you said about the universe telling you. See, I like all that now, that we waste so much of our lives looking for answers, whereas all we need to do is to find an explanation that's big enough.
Well, I also think that it's really a matter of, bringing things down to a, I used to suffer from, alcoholism was a great teacher, being able to stop drinking was a great moment. But I got this book called The Wealth Within, Ainsley Mears's book, which was about relaxing meditation. And I used to go and take meditation sessions with Vera Langley, who was a beautiful protege of his. And that was mind-changing for me, and very quite simply, quite profound in a very simple way. But it brought things down into the present. Mm. And
that song of yours, which is from the I Wish I Was Still Drinking.
Mm.
That's from that album. What's
that's from? I think it's from Are You Looking at Me?
You're Looking at Me, yeah. Mm. And that tells that story beautifully. Yeah. For people who don't know it, it's a beautiful summation of what Colin.
Well, I think a lot of people
the ups and downs of it all.
Yeah, well, I think the joke of that was that sometimes when you're talking to people, you wish you were still in that state.
Mm. Yeah, you miss it.
Just to call
that individuality, John, that you talk about, that non-conforming individuality that you say ascribe to myself or Colin or Father Bob. Don't we all have it? Right. And some repress it so much, and isn't part of life about finding it and having it and having it out in the world? Well, and a lot of people carry it and repress it. I think never
find it.
Well, one of the great things about doing the solo thing is that one of the reasons why, because I started doing this thing 20 or 25 years ago to maybe five people, really, literally, which was odd because it was big things, and then it was like four people sitting in the audience, and then it grew from that to
50,000 people to four.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, and now it's maybe 1,000, so it's grown. But one of the things that happens is that when you're out there and you're kind of obviously performing, you're doing the best job you can to not only entertain, but you're letting people see who you are. Mm. It allows them to do that as well. So I can see that happening in people too. Is that's one of the reasons why you connect and the circle thing starts happening, where you put it out and it comes back. And that's why it never really doesn't. There's no start and end to that. It really keeps going.
So that live performance, it could be a treadmill if you didn't like it, but in fact you seem to thrive on it. It seems to energize you.
Yeah, it does. It's brilliant. It's a fantastic thing, but it has to do with, I remember standing on a stage at the Birchmere in Alexandria last year, and there's one of those moments of euphoria hit me where I just thought, oh, and there was the road crew and there was the bar staff setting up the tables, and I thought, I'm in exactly the right place. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Colin does it with a lot of love, really, and I think you feel that when you see him in, Yeah, love. Any artist who does it with love is special.
And the fact that people then draw from that speaks volumes, which is what Father Bob did for so many years too. Father Bob McGuire, formerly of South Melbourne Parish.
Still living there.
Seeking crowdsourcing for a documentary that's being made about him, Pozible, pozible.com, in Bob We Trust. Michael Lunick performing, and we heard Gian, together with Simon before, live in the studio, and Colin Hay touring around with a new CD, Gathering Mercury. And if you've not been to a Colin Hay live show, well, you are seriously missing out. I can't recommend it to you enough. Colin, Michael, Bob, thanks for coming.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Subscribe now and you'll receive automatic updates with special guests, interesting interviews. It's a bit of fun. You'll be mad not to subscribe. abc.net.au/Melbourne.